This episode of Crime Wave, Barry Graham reads his story, Big Davy Joins the Majority.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums!
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the art of the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, the Crime Wave's creator, your crime caper commentator. This month's episode is hosted by Rob Olson and Livius Netted, the boys from the Booked podcast. Check them out. The Crime Wave is produced with help from Aldo Calcagno and Lee Dal Monte. It is not safe for your minivans, so put those earmuffs on your kids.
Consider yourselves warned.
Welcome back, Crime Wave listeners. I'm your host, Livius Netted.
And I'm Rob Olson.
Very excited to bring you a short story this week. So not an excerpt from a book, but a kind of a standalone short story. And I got to tell you, this one's pretty goddamn good.
Yeah, I checked it out not long before recording this, and I was really, really happy with it. This is going to be, as you heard at the beginning of the episode, Barry Graham reading a story called Big Davy Joins the Majority. Barry Graham, published by PM Press. He's got, I think, a couple things out by them. And PM, you might recognize the name. We had just a couple episodes back on Crime Wave, Ken Wishnia read an excerpt from his book Red House. And they've just got a ton of stuff out. People that I know, Nick Mamatas, however you want to say his name, a book called Sensation, Jim Nesbitt, Snitch World. There's a bunch of them out there, and they're just really cool. They're really excited to get more crime in your ear holes over here at Crime Wave.
But tonight, you're going to be hearing Big Davy Joins the Majority.
I fired a shotgun 20 years ago. The ricochet hit me today. So now I'm lying against a garbage bin in the midden. In the back court, some boys are swearing, spitting, and throwing stones at one another. A Glasgow tradition that hasn't altered since I was their age. Two of them are standing near me. I don't know if they haven't noticed me or are just ignoring what they think is some jakey lying among the bins. I can't feel anything, but I can hear the blood pouring out of me. At first I hoped it was piss, but I know it's not, because I can hear it pour out with every beat of my heart. I know I'm going to be joining the majority before Alec. I hear the boys singing. I went to a party on Saturday night. Ratongs were there and they wanted to fight. So I pulled my blade out as quick as a flash, and I shouted, the young team, ya bass. The first one that came was 5'4". I lifted my boot and he fell to the floor. The cunt was in agony, the cunt was in pain. So I lifted my boot and I fucked him again. We a toodle, I oodle, I oodle, I yay. The Maryhill Young Team doesn't exist anymore, so I didn't know kids still sang that song. Then I realised I'm not hearing these boys because they're not singing. They're still swearing and throwing stones. I'm hearing Alec and me singing it when we were boys. We were both in the team, and we both wanted to be hard men. Everybody else in the gang knew better than to go ahead with either of us, and it looked like it would only be a matter of time till the two of us went at it. But we never got the chance then. I hit a guy too hard and he got paralysed, so that got me a couple years in Glenochle. I might have got longer, but my lawyer said it was just an ordinary fight, and that I just hit hard because it was so big for my age, and the judge gave me the benefit of the doubt. Stupid people always make life easier. I was 18 when I got out. I got back in the team, but Alec had left because he'd started working for Arthur, who'd been running the city since before we were born. When you were out and about in pubs and clubs, you wouldn't say Arthur's name, just his initials. There was a young guy who got angry because the bouncer wouldn't let him into a club, and he not only said Arthur's name, he said Arthur was his dad. It wasn't true, and you could always tell by looking at the guy afterwards because his face got cut up so that it looked like a map of Glasgow. It might have been Alec who did the cutting. The big difference between Alec and me back then was that I was a cunt and he wasn't, so he was getting paid to do what I was doing for nothing, and I mean for nothing. I didn't get paid for it, and I didn't have any reason for doing it. I just did it. When I was 20, I decided it was time to grow up and get a job, since I had plenty of work experience, even though I'd never been off the Billy Joel, except while I was pleasuring Her Majesty. I wanted to ask Alec about maybe working for Arthur, but I hardly ever saw him anymore. I knew this guy, Pat. He was the dad of a boy I was locked up with, and I knew he knew the facts of life. So I went and saw him, and he told me Alec was always at this pub, the Ponderosa, which was owned by Arthur. It was off the Gallowgate, not that far from Pat's house, so when I left Pat's, I walked there. It was so cold that when I stepped in a piece of dog shit, it was like stepping on a stone. When I got to the pub, it was packed arsehole to balls, but I was glad of the heat. People were looking at me like they always look at you in pubs like that if they haven't seen you before, but nobody said anything to me. I went and stood at the bar and waited to get a pint. When the barman served me, I asked him if he knew Alec Credy. He gave me a funny look and didn't say anything. "Right next to you, cunt. You blind?" Alec put his arm around my shoulders when he said it. He was laughing. "Sorry, mate, never saw you. I figured that out myself. How you doing?" "Could complain, but what's the point? Yourself?" "I'm fine. If you did complain, what would it be about?" "Bugs Bunny or the lack thereof." "Money? You looking for a tap?" "No, it's nothing like that." "Well, buy me a pint and tell me what it is like then." "Typical. Tell them you're skint and they tell you to buy them one." I couldn't think of anything else to do though, so I waved to the barman and pointed to Alec. We took our pints and moved away from the bar, over to a corner. Now that I was with Alec, nobody was bothering to look at me. "So, what's the crack?" Alec asked me. "I actually came down here looking for you." He made a face. "I was wondering if your employer has any openings." "For what?" "For what you're doing." "What is it I'm doing?" "Whatever it is, I'd like to do it as well." "Right. I was hoping you could help me out there. Where are you?" We drank our drinks and talked about other things. It was good to see him, which surprised me a bit. We were just talking and getting along fine, and then something changed, the way it just does. Alec downed what was left of his pint and said, "Who the fuck do you think you are?" "What? Coming in here?" "I told you, you've got some fucking neck on you coming in here." "You're out of order, wee man." "Think being big makes you a hard cunt?" I turned to walk past him, but he blocked my way. "Excuse me," I said. "There's no excuse for you, you cunt." I grabbed him by the hair, pulled his head down, and started to kick him in the face. But what worked in the back courts of Maryhill wasn't going to cut it in the Ponderosa. It felt like half the pub jumped on me and dragged me off him, but it was probably only about a half dozen of his posse. Everybody else in the place just stood around and watched as Alec stood in front of me while his mates held me so I couldn't move. "Kicks in the face, is it, big man?" he said. "Okay." He did a kind of running jump and rammed the heel of his boot into my mouth. Then he did it again. Then they were all kicking me, and kicking me, as I crawled across the room and out the door. The cold actually felt good. I managed to stand up, and shit ran down my legs and out over my socks and shoes. Some people in the street laughed at me as I staggered along the Gallowgate till I reached Pat's house and banged on his door. "Fuck's sake, son, I thought it was your mate you were going to see." "I thought so too." "Fuck, we better get you to hospital." "No." "Well, we need to get you cleaned up. You've shat yourself." "No." "What do you want then?" "A shooter." "A shower?" "A shooter." "Don't be daft. I know you've got one." "I've only got a shotgun." "That'll do." "Fuck off. Have you ever even fired a gun?" "No, but I'll figure it out." He led me into the bathroom. "Look at the state of yourself." I looked in the mirror. My lips were like rubber hoses and my front teeth were broken. My cheeks and chin were raw meat. "Give me the shotgun. I'll bring it back," I said. "Look, clean yourself up, go home and get some sleep, and we can talk about what to do tomorrow." "You just want me to calm down so you can talk me out of it tomorrow. Give me the fucking gun. You know I looked after your boy in the jail." "Don't start that. You can have the gun if you want it. Just aim low, okay?" As I walked back up the road to the pub, I still looked the same way I had when people were laughing at me, but nobody laughed at me now. Carrying a shotgun makes you less amusing. The pub was still busy, but people scattered when they saw what I was pointing. It was like Moses parting the fucking sea. I had the wrath of God in my hands. Alec was standing at the bar, and when I took aim at him, his mates disappeared like ghosts. Realizing he was alone, he started to cry. At the last second, I remembered what Pat had said about aiming low. I wasn't sure of my aim, so I got down on my knees on the ash-covered floor, held the shotgun as steady as I could, and pulled the trigger. I'd never heard a noise like it. It's not like it is on TV. I felt like somebody had clapped their hands over my ears, hard. I saw Alec's clothes turn red, and I saw him fall, and I saw the empty shell fall to the floor. Then I saw a man in a suit and tie pick the shell up and put it in his pocket. He looked around. None of you saw what happened. He told everybody, "Get Alec out of here." By the end of the night, I didn't know if Alec was dead or not, but I knew I had his job. I worked for Arthur for the rest of his life, which was another 15 years or so. When two young guys murdered Arthur's son, but nobody could prove anything, they were found in a car on the day of the funeral, along the funeral's route, with their heads air-conditioned. That was me. Alec never worked for Arthur again. In fact, he decided he'd had enough and got out the game. He moved to Paisley and got a job in a pub there and ended up buying the pub. He didn't seem to hold anything against me. When Arthur died of a heart attack, I saw Alec at the funeral and we shook hands. The other day, I got a phone call from Alec. He said he needed to talk to me about something he needed help with, and that we shouldn't talk about it on the phone. For old time's sake, and because I still quite liked him, I drove up to Paisley and went to his pub. We sat at a table, and he told me whatever I had was on the house. I had some drinks and fish and chips. He drank, but he didn't eat anything. It didn't look like the life of a respectable businessman had been good for him. He looked bloated, and his skin was grey. He remarked I looked like I was still in the same shape I'd been in 20 years ago. "Yeah, aside from being bald now," I said. "Nice of you not to notice that." We both laughed. "So what can I do for you?" I asked him. "Well, the long and the short of it is that some cunts are hassling me." "You want me to sort them for you? How many are there?" "I might not be in your league, mate, but I'm not decrepit. I'll sort them myself. I just need the tool of the trade, like." That was no problem. I told him the price, he agreed, and I said I'd phone him when I had it. I phoned him today, and we met for a lunchtime drink at the Woodside Inn in Maryhill. We went into the toilet and locked the door. I opened my bag and took out the merchandise. "This is a Glock," I said, "like the American rapper boys sing about." He took it. "Very nice," he said. "I aim to please. I'll be able to right some wrongs with this, thanks." He dug in his pocket and handed me a wad of notes. I put it in my pocket without counting it. I gave him the bag and he put the Glock back in it. We went back into the pub and sat at a table and drank. "I've got to say, mate, you've been a lot more helpful to me than I was to you when you came to see me in a pub 20 years ago," he said. "Ah, don't worry about it. A lot of water under the bridge and all that," I said. "Well, it's appreciated. You're welcome. Hey, you hungry? Want to go and have lunch somewhere?" "I wish I was hungry, but I don't eat much nowadays. If I do, I bring it back up. All this weight's not fat. It's edema." "What are you ill?" "That's about right. I'm signed up to join the majority soon." "The what?" "The majority of people, like Arthur, and some people you've signed up." "What?" "Cancer, mate. Game's a bogey." "Are you fucking kidding?" "I wish I was." "Fuck's sake, Alec. That's what I said when I got the word. Fuck, I'm sorry. I don't even know what to say. It could be worse. At least I'm not leaving any kids or a wife." "You never had any?" "Nah. It's difficult to do that kind of thing when some bastard shot your cock and balls off." "Oh shit, Alec. I didn't know." He pulled the Glock and fired. I wasn't sure where it hit me. I felt the impact all through my body. I let bygones be bygones because I wasn't going to jail for you, Davy. He fired again. The barmaid was screaming. People were running out the door. "Why would I get locked up for wasting you, you cunt, when you took everything else away from me?" He fired again. "Nothing to lose now, though, mate. Might as well have some fun. I stood up. It was so easy to stand up. At first I thought none of his shots had hit me. But I tried to grab at him and couldn't feel my arms. I turned and walked out of the pub, and he walked after me, firing again, then again. I went into a close, thinking he would follow, but he didn't. I think he got in his car. Maybe the Glock was empty now, or maybe he just knew he'd done enough. I kicked a door, hoping somebody would answer and get me an ambulance, but nobody did. In the back court, I looked for something soft to lie down on, but there was nothing except the bags of garbage in the midden. I lay down, and I'm still lying here, and I don't know how long it's been. The boys came into the back court and threw stones and spat at one another and ignored me. Unlike Alec, I have kids, but I haven't seen them in a long time. I don't think I ever will again. I'm joining the majority, but I don't think any of us see each other there.
Okay, what you just listened to was Barry Graham reading his story, Big Davey Joins the Majority. We didn't mention beforehand, he's got a little bit of a, I believe, a Scotch accent. I think he's Scottish, even though he lives in the United States, right?
Yeah, dude, is it actually called a Scotch accent?
I think it's Scotch, yeah. If you're Scottish, it would be Scotch.
Interesting. Here's the one thing that came to mind. Now, lately, there's been this movement that, you know, if you like use the word cunt, that it's kind of a anti-feminist.
Sure.
You know, yeah, but this guy says it, and it just sounds so badass. So you need that Scotch accent, apparently, because then you can just get away with it.
It's very casual, too. Like, Livia, shut up, you cunt.
Yeah, and exactly. Then, like, and it sounds just badass, right?
Yeah. I don't know if we as Americans can pull it off. I think you have to have British or Irish or some sort of Scottish kind of origins. Otherwise, you sound like a cunt when you say it.
I think what I want to do is I want to drink some scotch and then try to sing that song that he sang at the top of the story,
which was
goddamn excellent. So here's a little bit about Barry Graham, other than his singing ability and maybe perhaps scotch. I don't think it's scotch. I think you have to say Scottish.
Yeah, but if you're like, let's say you're part Scottish and part Irish, it's Scotch-Irish. I know that.
If only we knew somebody.
Yeah, if only there was a way. Yeah. Barry Graham, if you're listening, let us know.
Barry Graham is a Caledonian gentleman of letters whose previous occupations have included prize fighting, monastic vocation, the fourth estate, vagabondage, and the general avoidance of honest toil. Along the way, he has penned more than a dozen books, including the novels The Book of Man and When It All Comes Down to Dust. Three of his novels and a collection of his stories have been translated into French, and I believe that you say cunt the same way in French.
Yeah, but it sounds snottier, I think. More snooty. Snootier. Do you know what the Fourth Estate is? This is a little pop quiz.
I didn't understand any of the bio, to be quite frank.
The Fourth Estate is a way of referring to journalism. Journalists are the Fourth Estate.
Nice. What are the first three?
I think it had to do with, like, British government. There's, like, the royalty, and then there's, like, the houses and stuff like that, and the royalty, and then the nobles and the commons, I think. I could be wrong about this, but then so those are the three estates, and then the fourth would be journalism.
I was actually hoping you'd say you don't know, just like kind of, you know.
Was I right? Are you looking it up?
I have no idea. No, I'm totally going on your word on this one.
All right. I'm probably wrong, and there's someone out there who's a journalist who thinks I'm a big idiot for just getting that entirely wrong.
You're such a cunt.
Like, listen to this cunt. Doesn't even know what the Fourth Estate is. He must be into vagabondage or whatever that other thing was.
Homeless people tying other people up. I think it's genius.
So, yeah, that story was pretty awesome, though. I guess that's the point that we're trying to make.
Yeah, I really, really like this one, and it's it's my favorite audio story I've heard in quite some time.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I think the voice lent a little character to the story, a little realism for us American people who just sound like American people. Mm-hmm. But it was weird because, like, at the beginning, I didn't know what to expect from it. It was pretty, you know, even keeled. Not a lot of crime until later on. So, like, I was thinking, oh, I don't know where this is going to go. And then it really kind of picked up a good pace, and the payoff was great. Feel free to check out some of the previous episodes of Crime Wave if you're just picking this up new. Recently, we've had David James Keaton on, reading a story from a live reading that we recorded. Nick Corpon was on recently reading his story from our book anthology. Like I said before, Ken Wishnia reading from his book Red House. And those are just the ones that we've hosted. There's a plethora of stories. Seth Harwood reading his story To the Bone from the book anthology. We've had people like Jedediah Ayers on here, just a ton of awesome people. So Johnny Shaw, who's really big, Portland dude, big into the crime fiction. So, yeah, until you can get some more, definitely check out some of the older ones if you're new to us.
Yeah, and speaking of, you mentioned Seth Harwood. Apparently, there's an update on the new Jack Palms book, which I'm sure listeners will be thrilled to hear.
Yeah, pretty exciting. I know we told you a little bit last time he was making progress. I think we gave you a word count. But now he's actually finished his first draft, and he gave us an update. I think he said it's just over 61,000 words. Of that, 126 uses of different forms of the word fuck. So that still comprises about 0.2 of a percent, which I think is about where he was at before. But that's a lot of fucks, if you ask me. He gives a lot of fucks.
Yeah, it's good to pace your fucks.
You don't want to fuck someone to death. Really, if you think about it.
Yeah. Oh, God. So exciting stuff there. Now, Seth, the man himself, as we mentioned on the last episode of Crime Wave, got married. But he's been just all over the place, right? Like, he's been, like, traveling the world.
Yeah, he's on the East Coast a lot. I think he was in, like, New York. I think he was in a couple places, like maybe somewhere in Pennsylvania or Maryland or something like that. He just seems to be traveling a lot. And I think he's in, like, Arizona or somewhere in the West or, like, the Southwest right now.
Dude, I gotta tell you, I was thinking about it. It seems a little suspicious. I think maybe he's on the run.
He's on the run from the law?
I don't know, man. He's, like, traveling the country, and he's only in places for, like, a day or two, and then he, like, checks in from somewhere else. I don't know. I'm just saying, something's not quite right here.
I don't know. All I know is I see on Facebook every now and then updates from him. I think the last one I saw, he got some new, what he called, writing shoes?
Shoes. You know what you do with shoes? You run with them.
All right. Seth Harwood, our the host, the creator of Crime Wave, we believe, is on the run from the law.
Yeah, I think we're actually aiding and abetting right now just by doing this podcast. We're enabling him to continue to be on the run.
We're throwing up a smoke screen.
We are. Now, the other thing you wanted to mention, and I'll let you do this, but it seems like he might be a big Rick Springfield fan.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Am I reading this right?
Yeah, I guess Seth was recently, actually before he went on the run, it looks like, because this was in San Francisco, I believe. He was at Book Passage Crime and Mystery Conference, and Rick Springfield was there, and he actually put up a video online of Rick Springfield playing, what's the name of that song? I'm not a Rick Springfield guy.
Wow. It's called Jesse's Girl. I actually am a Rick Springfield fan, and I was very excited to hear that Seth was sharing this great Rick Springfield video, that we're like kindred spirits about this this musician.
But what he said was it was the low light of the crime mystery conference. I don't know if
he
was.
Oh. Yeah.
And he did show up. Springfield showed up like 45 minutes late. My response, just to be kind of like the kind of holier than, like, I like to be a little, feel like I'm better than people sometimes. And
get out of here.
I know, me, right? I responded and I said, what an author.
Now, for those of you who don't know, Rob and I host another podcast called Booked, where we mostly do book reviews. We do some interviews and stuff. We actually reviewed Rick Springfield's book, Magnificent Vibration. It's his first fiction novel. And I honestly, people think I joke, lifelong Rick Springfield fan. I've been a Rick Springfield fan since I was like 10 years old, and I'm not ashamed to say it. I am ashamed to say, though, that I was the one that pushed for us to read that book, and man, it was kind of terrible.
Yeah, it was a dud.
Yeah. So, just keep listening to the Rick Springfield album, Seth. You'll get to love them. Don't read the book.
Yeah, the book is a crime. So now we got a draft of the new Jack Palms out. Keep an eye out for more updates on that. I'm sure Seth will definitely make sure that we keep you in the know about what's going on with that. if you're looking for some reads in the meantime, the book, The Anthology, featuring Seth Harwood, Nick Corpon, David James Keaton, some pretty damn good crime writing, if you ask me. Still available for the Crime Wave audience at a discounted rate, usually at $7.99. If you go to our website, bookedpodcast.com, click on the store in the upper right-hand corner of the screen. There's a motorcycle gang outside of my apartment. Enter the code CRIMEWAVE, and you'll get $5 off and get the book for $3 instead of the usual $8.
Why aren't they leaving?
I don't know. Just hanging out.
It's like revving, like they're trying to get your attention outside. Yeah, and again, if you're looking for another podcast, please, while you're over there buying your copy of the book, The Anthology, give us a listen. Most recently, we reviewed The Rain King by Kevin Lynn Helmick, which is a Western. It's a little bit of a crimey Western. So
it's not a bunch of handshakes and hog tie and cattle or whatever.
Right. Rob is obviously in the know about the wild, wild West. So. But yeah, it might be something you want to check out. And then come back soon for another episode of Crime Wave.
All right. Until next time, I'm Rob Olson.
And I'm Livia Snedden.
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by the Crime Wave.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.